I am the architect. I created the Matrix.
Shall we play a game?
Hey there, group. This is Bob Sherwood. It's Sunday morning. Are you ready for a fascinating story? It's going to take a few minutes for me to develop. I'll try to move through it as quickly as possible, but I have one advantage over many people that are listening here, that I've lived through a number of government crises. Of course, the one we're living through now is unique, but I'm going to tell you about one I lived through, about government policies, about government research, about wasted money, not millions, but billions and billions of dollars. Now, it starts in probably about 1967 or 68. Scientists, guys with PhD, women with PhDs all over the world, were convinced that eutrophication of lakes was the crisis that we all faced. In fact, many of the scientists forecasted that Lake Erie and Lake Michigan would totally be eutrophied within 25 years or 30 years if we didn't take action. Now, eutrophication is a process, it's a normal process, by the way, by which a lake becomes land over time, maybe a million years or so. But in this case, the scientists said, no, it's going to happen quickly. We need to do something fast. Now, the culprit in this wasn't a virus, but a thing called phosphate, PO4, phosphate. Phosphate was used in fertilizers. Fertilizers were used to fertilize the grass. Rain would come and wash the phosphates off the grass into the lakes, creating massive algae blooms. The algae would die, would become anaerobic, take oxygen out of the water, kill fish, algae would grow more, and eventually the lake would be full of algae and eventually become a swamp and then eventually a piece of land. And that, over the course of a million years, is the process of eutrophication, eutrophication. Now, yours truly, I just graduated from college with a master's degree in environmental engineering, and I became an instant expert in phosphate removal, how to get phosphate out of wastewater before it went into the lakes. And literally, within about a two-year period, I published more than 27 articles on how to remove phosphate from water. I worked with a renowned researcher who received several patents on it, and the EPA called us one day, and they called me, a young guy, I was probably 26, 27 years old, down to Washington, D.C., and we stayed at the Watergate Hotel. I was pretty impressed with myself, I must admit. They took me into a large room, and there were probably 20 people in the room, all from the EPA, all had PhDs in some level of environmental engineering or politics or social sciences, but none of them had anything knowledge in phosphate removal. So I was the expert, and I was introduced as the expert, Robert Sherwood, to explain to the EPA about phosphate removal. I was explaining to all of these PhDs about phosphate removal. Now, they had me there for a reason. They wanted to declare a national emergency and require every wastewater treatment plant in the United States of America to remove phosphates down to a certain level. Their problem was, what level should that be? And they measure that level, by the way, in parts per million or milligrams per liter. So I presented my information on phosphate removal, and it gets pretty complicated because it has to do with things like hydroxyapatite and methods of removing it. And you remove it by chemicals, or you can remove it biologically, and there's some clever ways to do it. But that's not the point of the story. So during the EPA presentation that I was making, the PhDs from all over the United States always ask the same question. What's the minimum level that we can remove phosphates? In other words, if you had all the money in the world and you could remove it, how low could you actually remove it? Now, of course, I said, well, you can't remove all of it. That might cost $1 trillion. But I said, you can probably remove it down to 0.1 milligrams per liter. And I don't remember the context of the whole conversation, but I remember talking about the minimum level for phosphate removal. Now, they didn't ask me how much that would cost. I'd say you could do it chemically or you could do it biologically, but you could do it in every wastewater treatment plant in America. They were ecstatic about that. And 0.1 milligrams per liter sounded pretty low. So they didn't make any calculations. For example, if we removed it down that low, would we slow down eutrophication? Would eutrophication change? How many pounds of phosphate would be removed from the effluents going into the streams? I hope I'm making this clear. The EPA wanted to require wastewater treatment plants to remove phosphate so it did not get into the Lake Michigan, Lake Erie, and all the other lakes in the United States. They just wanted to know it was a reasonable number to policy for them to put forth. So I told them 0.1 milligrams per liter. Now, as you can imagine, within a year, guess what the standard was imposed on all wastewater treatment plants in America? 0.1 milligrams per liter. That was a standard. There was no calculations ever done. There was actually no eutrophication calculations ever done. But a few scientists with great credibility and marvelous resumes and work for the government and were objective, had predicted that if we didn't do this, eutrophication would occur. So the EPA recommended the government, recommended to the administration, that we spend millions and millions and actually billions of dollars removing phosphate from all these plants in the United States, all wastewater treatment plants. And bingo, our company, which was a small company in those days, went from literally $2 million a year to $500 million a year. We benefited from that policy. Now, I knew all along that 0.1 milligrams per liter probably had no real effect on eutrophication. But nobody asked me, and I wasn't a scientist. I was just a young guy out of KU with a master's degree in environmental engineering. But the scientists all knew better. And by the way, the administration loved it. They loved the idea that the Environmental Protection Agency, which, by the way, was a new agency, had just been formed. I believe the guy who took it over in the first guy was a guy named Ruckelshaus, something like that. Anyway, it was a new agency. It was part of clean the environment, make it better for everybody, spend any amounts of money. But no one ever asked at any point, if we removed all the phosphates to 0.1 milligrams per liter, would it have any effect on eutrophication of our lakes? No one. People just said, the scientists declared this was the level, let's go remove it. Cities didn't care. Why? Because the money came from the federal government. Contractors didn't care because they were building the wastewater treatment plants. The consulting engineering firms didn't care because they were making tons of money designing plants to remove phosphorus. And frankly, our company didn't care because we were making money and we were one of the few companies that knew how to do it. That's right. And I think in the next probably 6 or 7 years, I became even more of an expert on phosphate removal. I was asked to talk at conventions and gave papers in worthwhile journals, the Journal of Civil Engineering and the Journal of, I don't know, different journals. But the point is that no one ever asked the question, is this really going to help? Well, at the very highest level, you'd say, well, if we didn't do anything, that wouldn't be good. So let's just go down to 0.1 milligrams per liter. That's the answer. There was never any calculations ever made on the benefit. But I can tell you, people got behind it 100%. It was incredible. Cities got behind it. It was like, oh my gosh, we better remove this phosphate, or otherwise our local lake's going to be destroyed. Now, Lake Tahoe was one of the first plants in the United States that made an aggressive effort to remove phosphates, and I was very much involved in the in that whole process. In fact, National Geographic did a big story on how smart and how clever we were to remove phosphates before it went into Lake Tahoe and protected Lake Tahoe from eutrophication. That was a theory. There was no proof of that. It was just a scientist's theory. It wasn't even a theory. Maybe it was a hypothesis, but it had never been proven that it even helped. But that didn't matter. If the money was there, we spent it. Because people were what? People were scared if they didn't do it. Cities were scared if they didn't go ahead and remove this phosphorus, this deadly, virulent, evil phosphorus from their wastewater treatment plant, of their wastewater effluent that went out to a stream, that the stream would become eutrophied. It would become full of algae. And it would die, their precious streams. Probably over 15 years, this madness occurred. I don't know how many billions of dollars were spent, but it was billions. Now, the fact is, very few plants ever actually got up and running to remove phosphorus. Because it just took too long. The government agency had plenty of money, but not enough. And of course, eventually people started thinking, wait a minute, we're spending a lot of money on this. And so the money would just cut back. Not for any reason other than politically, it would just cut back. The EPA money was just reduced. Again, no studies were ever made. No studies have been made to this date on it. But guess what? There's not a lake in the United States has been eutrophied, you know, Lake Michigan, Lake Erie. In many of those cities, in fact, most of them still dump all the phosphorus in the wastewater, in the water they have. Plants where we actually designed to remove phosphorus to 0.1 milligrams per liter decided it was too expensive and just stopped using the processes. Cycle back 40, 50 years later, no one removes phosphorus from wastewater treatment plants. We still use phosphorus and fertilizer. It still goes into the lakes like it always has done in millions of pounds a year. And guess what? Lake Erie and Lake Michigan are not eutrophied, and neither are any other lakes in the United States. There must be something we can learn from this that helps us to understand what we're going through now. Yes, people, not the government, but people, get behind something they are scared of. And they act accordingly. They're afraid. Logic doesn't come into it. Calculations don't come into it. Facts don't come into it. Facts become opinions. Opinions become facts. And the cycle continues. I want you to think about this EPA story. Absolutely true. I was involved in it, intimately involved in it, for almost 15 years before I switched into the computer business. So I saw it happen. I was part of it. All the players weren't going to raise a red flag and say, oh, wait a minute, we don't have data on this phosphorus removal. Why? Because all the players were making money. Our company was growing from literally 30 or 40 employees to 5,000 employees. Were we wrong? Well, it wasn't our job to set the standards. Why would we object to the standards that were being set? We were benefiting from it. So were the contractors, so were the consulting engineering firms. What about the cities? They didn't care. No city manager wanted to be accused of raising his hand and saying, I don't think this phosphorus thing makes any sense, so we're not going to take the government's money and build this plant. No. They just took the government's money and built the plant. It's surprising, once the money starts flowing in a certain direction, how hard it is to stop it. And that no one wants to raise their hand and say, it doesn't make any sense what we're doing. You see, it's not the government's fault. The government is a name. It's people. Before people work for the government, they were just people. They had good things and bad things and opinions and not opinions. And scientists, before they were scientists, they were just people. They made mistakes like you and I. And believe it or not, some of them aren't smarter than you or I. They do research. They don't consider all the variables. They make a conclusion. And guess what most people read? The conclusions. No one reads the data. No one reads the source of the data. Because the conclusions are the headlines. I had a good friend that worked for one of the big news agencies. And I asked him, I said, about how they always are talking about the planes that crashed and not about the planes that landed. And he said, well, no one wants to read about the planes that landed. So we print about the planes that crash. We print the things that get eyeballs. We print the headlines. No one in the 60s and early 70s wanted to raise their hand and say, there's no data that justifies spending billions of dollars on phosphate removal, because the scientists would disagree with them. The scientists would say, well, we've done our study, and the study shows eutrophication is advancing at an accelerating and scary rate. We better do something. Now remember, we ended up not doing anything. We ended up building a lot of plants that never actually removed phosphorus because they just stopped. It was too expensive for the city because the government didn't pay the operating costs of the plant. They just paid the capital costs. So when the cities found out what it was going to cost to operate these plants, they just stopped the phosphorus removal process and no eutrophication occurred. No one ever wrote about that. I could write a book on it. Why do that? But it's an example that I can provide, and it's an example that's in my mind. So when I read about the government scientists saying something, I know that these people, these scientists, were people long before they were scientists, and they made mistakes like other people, and they do research studies that aren't as pure as they would like to indicate in their conclusions. And they love to get readership, and readership is eyeballs. So that's my story for Sunday morning. I'll call it the EPA phosphorus removal story. I tried to make as clear as I could, but I guess the bottom line of the whole thing is this, is that we have to be very, very careful when we rely on scientists to make decisions that affect our lives. Scientists are not anything more than people they've gone to school longer than the rest of us. So I'll be signing off now. Think about this. If you have some comments, if you think I'm wrong, fine. Let me know. You've got my email address. But otherwise, we need to be cautious. We need to demand facts. We need to not be satisfied with the conclusions of a report. We need to know the background of the report, the basis of the report. I can give you many other examples of this, but this is one that I live through that I'm sharing with you now. Have a good day on the Sunday morning. That's all. See you.